from Raleigh, North Carolina, and New York, New York, it's Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike, a podcast dedicated to HBO's Westworld. Each week, we will discuss, theorize, and recap each episode. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hi everybody, welcome to Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike. My name is Jay.
My name is Mike.
And I'm on holiday.
And welcome to the show. How's everybody doing?
Good. This was an interesting follow-up to the first episode, I would say. I was talking with a couple of my friends after the first episode, and I think we were all kind of in agreement that the pilot itself felt very contained, even though there were things that were raising a lot of questions that we brought up in the last podcast. I felt like it sort of had a beginning, middle, and end on its own. This one definitely opened the doors up to a longer narrative. There were many, many more questions that were brought up. Even though we thought that probably no more doors could be opened, we essentially walked into a hall of mirrors of doors in this episode.
Yeah, definitely.
Can we start a new game, though?
What's the new game?
Each episode, can we guess how Teddy will be killed?
How's Teddy gonna die?
Because Teddy's just sitting there minding his own business. I'm getting ahead of myself, and then all of a sudden, breaks the glass, and bam, 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 bam. Teddy's dead.
I think it's
How is going to be an interesting question because he's almost always going to get shot.
That's
right?
True.
All three times he's died, he's been shot. I guess the question is, who's going to shoot Teddy this episode?
Yeah, right. I think that is.
Well, that guy came out of the blue, wasn't it?
So the guess or the bet would be Rando. Ticked off bar.
Yeah.
but poor Teddy. Something I think it's just the Marsden effect where he just has this face of a nice guy, and you know, nice guys always finish last, as they say.
I guess.
Or get murdered. One of the two.
I don't is he a nice guy though? Because he's wearing the black hat, and as was indicated when William makes his choice of wardrobe, there are very clear white hats and black hats
in this world. That is true. Maybe he's just trying to be. He's trying to be somebody he's not. Or there's a deep, dark.
Maybe that's why they keep shooting. Maybe that's why they keep shooting him. Because he's supposed to be a bad guy.
They don't like his fashion choices.
No, yeah. it's like he's wearing a giant target on his back.
Yeah.
You know, if you're wearing the evil guy regalia, you're gonna have people shooting for you.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Well, I guess the mystery of why Teddy always has to die.
That's really the most tantamount mystery in Westworld at this point, right?
it's what I'm thinking about.
He's going to be like Kenny on South Park.
but it's another good episode. To Mike's point, it definitely was less contained, definitely setting up the story, a lot of storylines. It seemed to unfold a little bit more on some of the bigger questions I had in the first episode, particularly with Man in Black, which I'll be excited to get into today. But a lot of good stuff. So before we get into the recap, though, want to take a second to thank the people that make this show possible, our patrons over at patreon.com/JNJack. We have over 144 patrons bringing in $880 a month, and it funds our podcasters, our hosting, all of that fun stuff, so that we can sit down, talk into a mic, cook up to a computer about our favorite TV show. So thank you so much to our patrons. If you'd like to become a patron today, you can do so by going to jayandjack.com and click on the Become a Patron link. All right, without any further ado, gentlemen, do you guys want to jump into our recap for Episode 2, Chestnut?
Well, we should, but in true Episode 2 of Westworld fashion, shouldn't two other random guys just hop on and start this podcast? Because that's how the episode starts, right?
I think that's a very, very fair point. Let's jump into that. It starts out with Dolores, who walks out at night, and there's like a man's voice saying, "Do you remember?" So there's two lines for that. There are like a gen or a man talking to her. Is that Bernie or is that her father, Abernathy? Do we have any guesses on that?
I would say her father.
I was thinking so at first, but now that we know at the end of this episode that Bernie seems to be doing some, I guess for lack of a better term, like, yeah, side coaching, I guess, with Dolores as to her reveries. It could be possible that we'll see more Bernie. I mean, I know that the voiceover in the first episode was the Hemsworth, right? And yep. I don't think that was him this episode. So I would go with Abernathy as well.
Okay. Because he seems to be guiding her on whatever, you know, mission that he instigated in the previous episode. But then we do cut to two new characters that are arriving at Westward, William and Logan. Now, is this, going back to the movie, because the movie kind of followed two guys going to Westworld for the first time, somebody that had been there before and somebody that never had been there before.
This was very similar to the movie.
Even down to like the archetypes of the new guy who's definitely a little more wide-eyed and kind of serves as an audience analog, and then the brazen asshole who's been here multiple times and decides to do whatever the hell he wants.
She's a two.
Definitely. When he referenced his sister, that made me assume that he was his brother-in-law, maybe. But they also maybe worked together.
I think they definitely worked together.
Yeah, because he says, like, oh, you're at work, you always act like this.
Yeah. But then why would he reference his sister, too? I don't know. Just whatever their connection is, it's kind of a little tenuous. They're both welcomed by their hosts, and William is welcomed by a particularly delightful host. I thought she was beautiful. What? I'm just saying.
She was.
I'm happy that we got to see that as well, the entry process. Because, again, in the first 15 minutes of the last episode, we got to follow what we thought was a guest for a long time until it turned out to be a host himself in the form of Teddy the first time that he died. and so it's nice to see, again, in line with the movie, here are two guys. This is what you do when you enter Westworld, in particular, who you interact with. I feel like this episode might have been a little more heavy-handed than the first in terms of its writing. I mean, you have a line here from the host who tells William, figuring it out is half the fun. And I feel like that's just the writers, just like Jonathan Nolan's just like reaching out to everyone in the audience being like, hey, we're about to look into a lot of crazy crap over the next 9 weeks, and I hope you enjoy it as much as we do.
Was there any doubt who was going to take the white hat and who was going to take the black hat?
It was probably the most obvious thing since, I don't know if you guys remember the promo for that CBS show Vegas, which I think had Dennis Quaid and I want to say
I remember that show.
Michael Chiklis, and like Dennis Quaid had a white cowboy hat and Michael Chiklis had a black cowboy hat, and you could tell very easily without even watching the show who was the good guy and who was the bad guy.
I gave that show an honest try.
You gave it a roll of the dice.
I tried. Yeah, it's a roll of the dice. But it came up 22.
We're focusing on William's choice of the white hat, but if you notice, there's a lot of different options there, and I think one of his biggest mistakes was not choosing the brown chaps that were there. I thought that was a missed opportunity.
Was it to be dressing alone? Maybe with that his biggest mistake.
Yeah, I'm very excited for three straight married white men to be talking about fashion choices every week on this podcast. Truly, this is in our wheelhouse, right?
I do a Dancing with the Stars. Yes, so
that's true.
That's true. And I do talk about RuPaul's Drag Race as well. So hopefully sense of fashion has glommed onto my gray matter.
Everything matches with jeans, right? Is that what the...
I hope so. That's been my MO for the past 27 years of my life.
I'll ask my wife, does this match? Here. She goes, you're wearing jeans. Okay.
Well, see, it's tough because if you start getting different colors of jeans, like I have gray jeans, like then you're in different territory. You can't wear a gray shirt with gray jeans.
That's where I screw up, and I say, but it's jeans. She goes, but they're gray jeans.
Choose the light jeans or the dark jeans?
Yeah, that's true.
You just keep the rules the same. Why does it matter?
Not to digress too far here, but we already get a sense of who William is because he doesn't want to partake in his introductory hosts. Offer to stay a little bit longer.
He's true to his girl.
Yeah, he is. He's an old-fashioned type.
Well, you say that until he picks up Dolores' can at the end, and I realize that sounds like a euphemism, but no, the can comes out in the road, and he picked it up. Get your minds out of the gutter, people.
But maybe Dolores is his girl. Maybe he's been there before.
Hashtag picks up her can. All right,
We have a title for the episode.
Yeah. We then go to Bernard, and it's Elise, right, I believe?
Yes.
And they wants to work on Abernathy to figure out what's going on. Elise seems to think something greater is going on. Bernard seems to be kind of downplaying it a little bit. Kind of Bernie, who seemed very much like the goody-two-shoes or very much the straight and narrow last week, seemed a bit more nefarious this week. Elise also wants to talk to Dolores to find out more info, and Bernard kind of shuts it down a little bit.
Yeah, and we also find out in this little segment that I guess the policy of Westworld with these glitchy hosts is let it lie, which I guess ties into the cold storage that we saw in the very last moments of the previous episode. But like we talked about last time, you have to imagine that's going to come to the surface sooner rather than later, that they're basically putting a bunch of bots in a corner and nobody puts body in the corner.
It's very true. Rule number one. So then we see Dolores, who's walking in the street. Man's voice says to remember, and she sees everybody dead. I assume this is a recall to a previous experience for her. This isn't a flash forward, if you will.
Yeah, you have to imagine that it's sort of what happens to Maeve throughout this episode, where she seems to be having flashes of a previous narrative, and whether that means, you know, we saw in Maeve's narrative that the Man in Black had a part to play in her life. We saw the Man in Black play a part in Dolores' life earlier on in episode one.
Yep.
But there could have been an instance some time ago where he went in and, like, slaughtered the entire town in order to get what he wanted.
That's true. And she runs into Maeve and tells Maeve the violent delights has violent ends to her, which seems to send Maeve's storyline or path in this episode forward.
Well, Maeve kind of put her down, didn't she?
I don't recall, but it definitely clicked with her.
She said something about don't be standing if you're standing out here, dumbing down the goods or something like that. I thought she kind of put her down, but I didn't write it down, so I apologize.
So her rebuttal is to like shut down her reality by exposing it as an entire lie.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's a deep cut. You know, I was like, I was just like teasing.
That's the worst yo mama joke I've ever heard.
Well, Maeve was having
Your
a rough
existence
time.
Is a farce.
She was having a rough time this episode.
But again, it kind of sets off with Dolores kind of infecting her with this violent delights has violent ends. We then have William, who picks the final piece of his ensemble with the light colored hat or the white hat, and he meets Logan at a train bar.
Now, just a lot of dust, a lot of dirt. The black hat would be the better choice.
Well, see, I feel like the,
going
that's true.
Back,
yeah,
because the white hat would show all the dirt.
I feel like we're focusing so much on the fashion. I think it's just more of the beating you over the head with this guy is a goody two shoes.
I'm just telling you why I'd take the black cat.
Okay, all right.
And Logan's speech here is very poignant in that I feel like we're going to get multiple viewpoints this episode on this idea of coming to Westworld means you're going to find out who you are.
Yes.
I mean, Logan has this entire speech where he says, I know that you think you have a handle on what this is going to be. Guns and tits and all that mindless shit that I usually enjoy.
Yeah.
You have no idea. This place seduces everybody eventually. By the end, you're going to be begging me to stay because this place is the answer to the question you've been asking yourself, who you really are, and I can't effing wait to meet this guy. But then you have Ford later on, which I'm sure we'll talk about, that says, you know, people come here thinking that they're going to find out who they really are, but they're not going to find out who they really are. They're going to find out who they want to be. And so I thought it was a super fun comparison point as to how the guests see the park versus how the man who created the park really knows how it exists.
I would go with Ford.
Well, yeah, it was just, but as you can see, Ford, the visionary that he is, he's thinking on a completely different, higher level than a simpleton like Logan.
But he's been there for 30 plus years.
Well, yeah,
or 60. We don't know how long he's been there, but it's just he knows the deal.
But Logan can't wait to meet that guy. But again, I feel like his choice in hat should have just told him what kind of guy he is. There's not gonna go too far from that. We then meet a new character, Lawrence, who's supposed to be hanged, but the man in black kills the people that were going to hang him and takes Lawrence with him.
It's funny they didn't show it.
Yeah, I thought that was a super interesting cinematography choice, considering how brutal we saw the violence in the first episode. Obviously, I don't think they're going to turn around any sort of editing choices based on maybe some feedback from audience members that they thought it was a little too graphic, but I enjoyed the choice to make it focused basically on Lawrence the entire time, with the exception of like the one lone straggler who tries to run away and then gets gunned down. You can just, maybe it's because Westworld is a place where your imagination runs free, and to only be exposed to the audio aspects of it almost brings to mind like the old days of radio plays where you really create your own imagination, and that the worst things you can even think about are the ones that you create rather than anything that they can show on the screen.
Absolutely.
Or it was cutting, or maybe it was just cutting the cost.
That's true as well.
Or you know, it's the Spielberg.
I like your theory, but
no, I think it's the Spielberg Jaws approach, where it's you barely see the shark, but that just makes it that much scarier. Because to your point, it's what's in your mind. I think there's also too a bit from a story perspective. We do see him tear up Lawrence's town later, so if you see him killing a bunch of people twice, it might not have the same impact. So they probably wanted to hold off on like the total shoot off showdown until
the town killings were pretty gruesome.
That's what I'm saying. So it wouldn't have had much impact, maybe, if we would have seen him take out all the sheriff's men at the hanging scene.
I like the Jaws comparison only because now I want to see like Richard Dreyfuss as a beleaguered janitor in Westworld.
We then go to Maeve, who loses her touch with men. She has flashes of being attacked by Indians, and engineers decide to bunk her aggression, because that's going to save things, because Lee wants to decommission him because he needs people for his new narrative.
And this is the first time that we also bring up the idea of dreams, and they're going to bring up later when they're investigating her, the workers were outlined that they don't give them dreams, they give them the idea of dreams, which I personally am still trying to wrap my head around, but it is interesting that they're talking about directly dreams really only function as memories, or at least representations of memories, and how it seems like a lot of the narrative of these hosts are going to be connected to their distant memories and how that might lead them to strike out.
Well, I think that's exactly it. Like, they're really detailing when they're showing Maeve's flashbacks. We're also seeing Dolores have some type of recall of what's happened to her in the past.
Total recall, if you will.
Yes, exactly. that this is what's making them, this is what will make them rebel, because they've had these horrible things done to them. And
over and over and over again.
Them remembering them is going to be that catalyst to push them forward. As the line says, these violent delights have violent ends. We then go to Ford and Bernard having a talk, and talking about the possibility of sabotage, to which I like that Ford kind of brings an Occam's razor and saying the simplest answer may not exactly be it. To where it's Ford, I think, has a greater understanding that this is just an evolutionary step versus Bernard, who seems to be just thinking the only way this could happen is if somebody nefarious is making something happen.
And maybe something that lends credence to the theory that Jack came up last week about possibly the Man in Black being a creation of Ford's once upon a time is Ford brings up this whole idea of them bringing life out of chaos in creating these hosts. And I believe the Man in Black later is going to talk about how life on the outside is nothing but chaos and how it's all about the exact details in Westworld. So maybe that one word, chaos, leads to a stronger connection between the two.
Yeah, definitely. We then go back to our good friends William and Logan, and they arrive into town. And Will's a little awkward, he gets bumped. He's like, "I'm sorry, sir."
That's the same guy that Teddy bumped into.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, which again,
the guy squared up on him, and William was like, "Oh, I'm sorry."
And William seems like, by the episode, by grabbing Dolores's cans, it seems like he's taking Teddy's place in the narrative point of the story.
Good call out. Definitely good call out. I also like there's a sense, you know, two episodes in now, there's this kind of Groundhog Day effect where you're kind of repeating the days, but it's also nice seeing little differences. Like, instead of the sheriff wanting to go get the bandit, it's, Union army men wanting to enlist people to fight. But then seeing the similarities, like bumping into the guy. So it's nice seeing how the story repeats, but it's also slightly different every single time, which is fun.
And I'm excited to see the Civil War narrative as well. I didn't even think about that, that at the time where a lot of Westerns usually take place, that's when the Civil War was going on in the late 1800s. And I know in the, you know, in the future on Westworld, there are shots of some of our characters in Union coats. So I'm excited for this war narrative to play into the season more, because that's obviously going to serve as a microcosm of the larger war that's going to brew, presumably, between the hosts and the humans.
Yeah. Yep. William helps old Patchy. That's what I'm going to call him, old Patchy. Logan says it's all a come on. They're all just trying to enlist you into some sort of adventure, or you're going to help this guy find gold. So he's definitely still trying to guide him to how he should experience the space.
So you think Logan went down that road with him before? Because he seems like he hates him.
Yeah, I have to wonder, like, I think Logan's the type of guy that would, like, go on vacation or, like, go to a beautiful tropical island for, like, the women, yeah. You know, and not to actually, like, see the sights. I could totally see him, like, the first couple times being like, yeah, I'll check it out, only for him to realize that it's really not for him. You know, I'd rather not go ziplining. I'd rather just lie on the beach all day and hit on people, which seems like what he's more acquiesced to do nowadays.
Yeah, exactly. He's just at Westworld for the robot orgies. That is it. but we then go to Dolores looking at herself in a window, and then we cut to Bernard having a secret talk with her. She's had 138 interactions since they last talked, but you know, nothing. Well, she says nothing has gone wrong, but Bernard says he notices something different about her. And then she asks him, which seems to kind of put him off a little bit, have you done something wrong? Which I thought was an interesting, almost challenging question to her makers or to her creators, which I thought was interesting. And Bernard shuts down the combo and moves on.
So let's talk about this idea that it seems like Bernie is dealing with Dolores secretly on the side. I mean, do you think it's specifically connected to the fact that she's the oldest host in the park? Do you think it's because of recent events? Do you think this has been going on for a while, or do you think this is some sort of recent developments that's just connected to Bernie's ever-growing fascination with these hosts becoming more and more human?
Yeah, I was thinking that, and then watching it the second time and kind of going back to the Ford and Bernie conversation, maybe this is like his detective work on trying to see, you know, what is going on. He was seeming to think it might be sabotage, so maybe he's having a secret talk with Dolores to figure out if there is something nefarious going on. Because when I first watched, I was like, well, maybe Bernie can't be trusted now. But the second time, I felt it was more him trying to maybe play detective and figure out what's actually going on. Because he does sense something different and wrong with Dolores.
How's Bernie getting away with all these private conversations with Dolores without anybody?
I mean, Bernie's getting away with a lot of stuff. Let's be clear here.
I mean, everything seems to be glass little cubicles, and there's people walking around the whole time. It's just like, why is he with Dolores again? What's going on with Dolores? I would question it. That's just me.
Yeah, I guess maybe their facilities are so large that, you know, if they're putting a bunch of decommissioned hosts on level 83. There must be, you know, like level 81 that nobody goes to or something, that he can have these secret conversations.
Or was it 51? Was it in the desert?
Area 51?
Area 51. So it's level 51, we'll call it. I don't know.
But I thought it was almost him trying to be a sleuth detective. What do you guys think? Is it nefarious, or where do you think he's at, or what his modus operandi is? What is his motivation?
Yeah, I can't call it nefarious as of yet, because again, nothing's really come of it. We've seen Dolores kill a fly. That's her casualty count as of right now. But until something really happens, then we can really point fingers at Bernie and call him like a host sympathizer. Otherwise, I think it might just be his curiosity. He's going to have this really interesting conversation later with his coworker that he's sleeping with, where, you know, she makes another remark to him, as we talked about in the first episode, that Bernie seems more interested in hosts than he is in people. And maybe this, again, just sort of buys into that character, that this guy would care less about asking you about how your weekend was, but he wants to pull aside the oldest host who has the most storied history and seems to have something going on a little bit deeper, just to find out more about her and maybe even just whether the reveries are working as well. I know that's it's a rather controversial thing that Ford has recently brought about, and it seems like the rest of the staff is really against it. But maybe Bernie is trying to really look into it to see what effect these reveries are having and whether it's making them behave more human-like.
I like the fact we don't know which way is, because it makes it better for a podcast. it gives you something to talk about. If he knew he was up to something, it'd be like, all right, he's up to something. What is he up to? But now we're like, okay, what is he, good? Is he bad? Is he sympathetic? We don't know yet.
Yeah, like I said, at first glance, first run through, I thought, well, maybe he's a little nefarious. But no, I think he was just digging in and he's trying to find out more information.
Could be.
But again, you know, he's sleeping with a coworker, which is against the rules. So Bernard could be off the rails.
We don't know that. This is a future world. Maybe they got rid of all of those coworker habitation laws and everyone just sort of practices free love.
Maybe it's the 60s.
Well, she seems like a superior. I feel like even then, in this future utopia where you can just sleep with anybody, sleeping with a superior might be against the rules. But I don't know. I don't know the rules of this universe that they're.
Maybe she's a host, so it doesn't matter.
I don't think so. But speaking of hosts, we then go to an aggressive Maeve who doesn't work so well.
That was just way too aggressive.
Well, so I was intrigued by this. I mean, was Maeve glitching out and that's why she was flirting with a woman? Or do you think the woman actually was interested in Maeve until she came on too hard to her?
I think she was interested. You know, I
agree. I think she was interested.
Because, again, it's with Westworld, it's probably whatever the hosts want to do, male or female, and they probably can play along with that. So I think she was interested. But whatever glitching or her aggressive spike just didn't work out too well. But we then have Penny Feathers having nightmares. Maeve teaches her count backwards trick, which we brought up later in the episode. But she still seems to be flashing back to this, seems to be getting attacked and being scalped. And she gets marked for recall, even though she's left to kind of have one last, you know, hurrah.
that was nice of him, at least, you know.
Yeah. We then go to Bernie and Teresa, and they talk about what corporate wants versus what Bernie is doing. And Teresa seems a little accusatorial here. A little, I don't know. What do you guys think? But I guess it kind of gets hurt. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like these workers outside of. I feel like we know a bit more about Bernie, even though, as you mentioned, Jack, I think his motives are still a little blasé. We know definitely a little bit more about Ford this episode. We know that Sizemore is a douche, but I feel like everyone else we really have no handle on. And I feel like Teresa is one of them. It's clear that she sort of serves as an extension of the company, and I guess she serves as sort of that mouthpiece so we know what the general figurehead of Westworld wants. But since we don't know too much about what that structure is, I don't really know too much about who she is as a character. So it's tough for me to really gauge an opinion on her.
Yeah, she definitely seems to represent the man, quote unquote, especially to the coworkers and when they talk to her. But it'll be interesting to see where that goes, because there's times where it's like that, but there's also times where she still, like when Lee's talking about his new narrative, well, have you asked Ford about that, where she kind of respects the organization as it is right now. So definitely some more layers to peel back there, but to your point, there's not many layers we need to find out about Lee, which Ford points out a little bit later.
Can we have like a running segment called like Lee's asshole moment of the week? Because this is definitely the one, right, where he's like, he basically wants to give one of the Native Americans a nose job. And it's interesting because like we knew that he had an impact on narrative. He was our go-to writer for this show. But I didn't realize that the people who had an impact on narrative could also like choose and design the characters as well.
I guess, because if they have, like, a story they want to tell, they probably, in their mind, envision, you know, their characters that they're writing the story for to look a certain way.
Well, it's probably like most writers or directors, they have a vision, they want it done their way, and it's, you know, sinks or swim by their vision. But he is obnoxious, though.
But in most cases, like the writers, they write, they kind of describe the character, but then it's on to the director to kind of, or casting to choose.
But you have had directors and writers not get along. Oh, which, sure. You know.
He seems to be a more involved writer or narrative lead. We then go to William and Logan having dinner. And Patchy wants to thank Will, but Logan stabs him in his hand.
Patchy, for some reason, sounded like Winnie the Pooh to me. I don't know what it was, but I imagine like this guy saying, like, ooh, bother, with a big fork sticking out of his
hand. Oh, Pooh.
That's Eeyore, actually, if you're doing
it. That's Eeyore, that's right. But to be fair to Logan, he did tell him a few times to go away before he stabbed him. I mean, it wasn't like he just, you know, that Patchy came over there and then he just stabbed him in the hand. Hey, you need to leave. You need to leave. And I think after the second time, you're allowed to stab someone in the hand. I think it's in the rules.
But Logan has lost his appetite for dinner, so he goes and has himself a nice robo orgy, while Will stays true to his hometown gal.
That's right. That was a lot of blood, though, Patchy was losing, though, wasn't it?
Well, you know, they got to make it look, you know, real for the... If you go to the movie where it just has that really fake, like, ketchup-looking blood, to this, it's a little bit different. Oh,
wait till we have the slow-motion bar fight, like the movie did.
Oh, I'm losing so much honey right now.
So Will has this girl. So he subscribes to the fact that sleeping with a host, a robo host, is cheating. You know, it's being untrue to his lady.
That did come up in the Married Man podcast. So,
oh, did it? Okay. So Will is that much of a goody two shoes. We then go to Lee. We talked about earlier, didn't like his new host for his narrative. Asked Therese for more hosts, and she asked if Ford approved his narrative. Lee doesn't seem concerned. He's like, he hasn't cared in years, which is a great allusion to later in the episode where he does care. We then go to Ford, who ventures into the park and meets a strayed bored boy who joins him on his trek. I've heard a lot of people talking about this boy. Any thoughts or theories on... We see he's a host later on, or a robot, but what are your thoughts on this kid?
So one of the thoughts that, again, I'll attribute to my wife is that she believes that the boy was created by Ford as a younger version of himself. And that's why they have very similar conversations, and why, you know, Ford says, oh, my father said the exact same thing, and why they form an immediate bond.
Yes. I'd like to thank your wife for ruining my crackpot theory.
I think this is why I left it open to you guys to say, because I think a lot of people felt that it was because Colleen thought the same thing. She's like, you better give me credit on the show. I was like, I was kind of thinking the same thing. Sure, why not?
Let's give credit to all our wives,
yes,
shall we, for this week?
Yeah, there you go. Or Jack, who had his crack.
Well, I did have that written down, so I guess now I have to think of something else.
Let's just say this, Jack. So a lot of people are thinking at high levels nowadays, okay? You might get away with your crackpot theories.
You don't want to come out right away and hit a home run right away. Because it's all downhill from there. So you take a few walks, you take a few hit by pitches, you know, get hit by a pitch a couple times, a few singles, doubles, triples, then you go for the homer.
Well, I will say this, Jack, as a producer, maybe just have a couple of crackpot theories, you know, stacked just in case they get spoiled here.
Well, I knew the boy was fake right when he walked in there, but no. Because why was he out in the middle of nowhere by himself? Who does that?
Because he wandered.
He wandered, yeah. Great parents that he has then.
Maybe that was in the narrative, that he has really bad parents.
but I like the thought and theory that the boy is a young...
it's not even a theory, it's fact.
But then we go to the Man in Black, who takes Lawrence to his hometown, is greeted by his family, and the Man in Black wants to know the entrance to the maze and wants to get to the next level. Very in a dreading, foreboding way, hands the girl the two bullets, and he's going to decide what to do, kills the whole town. That's a pretty sweet gun with the normal, was it, six-shooter revolver, and then the cannon blast option on the gun. That's pretty nice. I didn't see that in William's choices. I didn't see that one.
No, I guess that's the veteran's option, right? On your 30th-plus time visiting Westworld, you get to customize your own weapon.
Yeah, and that'll just blow through everything. But
this scene was badass, in my opinion. I mean, the shootout itself was, like, great, but I just loved the malicious tone behind the two bullets, which come into prominence later. I mean, we knew nothing of Lawrence going into this episode. It's apparent that he apparently has a family. He was some sort of criminal, though, that was about to be hanged for his crimes. But I just love this moment where he kills Man in Black, kills Lawrence's wife. He's about to shoot the daughter until the daughter, you know, rises out of her father's arms and tells him, you know, you're not fit to play the game. And I love it. It's a trope I know that they use in sci-fi a lot. They go, here's the little girl, or here's like the least likely person in this scenario you think would be the one to know all the information is the Oracle, is the person that knows everything. But I loved that turn, and to have her really be the one that knows all about the game. I'm still confused as to whether Lawrence really just doesn't remember, or if he was in on it but tried to plead the fifth in order to stick with the narrative. But I thought that was a really nice turn.
Well, it was also
the only problem I have with Man in
Black. Go ahead.
The only problem I have with Man in Black, he's this big bad guy and he's shooting everybody, but he can't be shot. So he loses a little bit of
the badassery, if you will.
Yeah, he just does. I mean, say this was a Clint Eastwood movie. Now, the Clint Eastwood does the same thing, but he can be shot. This guy can't be. We've seen it. He can't be shot. So,
what would you prefer? Yeah. The people with the aim of a stormtrooper shooting at them, or at least it makes sense to where when they do get shot, it's not going to kill them. I mean, I will agree there is a bit of a little less suspense because we know he can't be killed.
I'm just saying over time it'll lose something unless we finally see where he gets shot in the arm or something. He goes, I got shot. If we see something like that, kind of like in the movie where, James Brolin gets shot. And he's like, I got shot, you know, because he's shocked. If something like that happens, then, okay, he's a great gunfighter, stuff like that. Right now, I could be the him.
But isn't that even more horrifying, though, that this is a man who's essentially blowing his way through the town, killing anyone that he wants, and he's essentially unstoppable to the point of where they cut to the workers, who I know we talked last week about, you know, does anyone actually know that this guy, I mean, they should know that, like, one of their hosts got scalped, right? And it seems like the workers are totally aware, but because he's a guest, he sort of has this form of diplomatic immunity, and it's not going to be revoked anytime soon by Danny Glover.
Well, one of them said, who was it that said, he goes, this guest can do whatever he wants.
It was the older Hemsworth brother said that. And that was at least an answer from last week that we, question that we had, which is, you know, do they know what he's doing? But I guess he said he's been coming for 30 years, and to Mike's point about once maybe you hit, you know, 30 years, you get to customize your gun, and you also get to do whatever the heck you want.
I mean, he's a bad guy. I get that. But to me, him killing up a town and killing everybody. Oh, yeah, big deal. You kill people that, you know, can't fight back.
Well, I have a question. Is he a bad guy if he's doing this to these hosts that aren't humans? Does that make you a bad guy if he's just playing the game?
So you're saying he's the original Man in Black who we thought was a bad guy, but it turned out he just wanted to go home.
he had mommy issues. Yeah.
So maybe he's not a bad guy. I don't know, but he has the black hat.
It's kind of like maybe one of the existential questions of, you know, are these sentient beings, or are these beyond just people that are there for the guest's pleasure to do whatever the heck they want to do?
Well, you remember Lost did that all the time. I hate to compare it to Lost, but J.J. Abrams. Maybe, remember they always started out, we hated the guy, and then oh, this guy's good.
Well, so you're actually I actually want to make another Lost comparison here as well while we're on the topic. I know that the Man in Black says in this segment here that, you know, he was born in Westworld, and it reminded me a lot of when Ben Linus told Juliet that he was born on the island, which turned out to be a lie on paper. He was not born. He was born in the off a highway in the middle of the woods, but he was, I guess, born on the island and that he came into his identity on the island. Could we assume that the man in black is saying the same type of thing?
I agree. Yeah, totally. Totally.
Nah, he's born in Portland. I don't know.
It's very important. I also liked when it seemed he must have... it was very game-like in where he unlocked the level, or at least the information on the level, because the daughter almost, like, broke character and just told him the information. It felt very much like an RPG game where you're kind of going around, you're trying to find something, and then somebody... You break whatever. Maybe that was his boss level where he had to, like, you know, take out everybody.
I'm really maybe Men in Black just thinks he's playing like a Western version of Assassin's Creed, which I'm sure there have been so many versions of Assassin's Creed that I'm sure, like, in the next 2 years, one will come out that is Western themed. But it does seem like he's, like, targeting very specific people in order to get objectives that make him move further along in his narrative.
Exactly. He's on a mission with a purpose. He is almost like Logan, where he's not going to go on Patchy's gold finding adventure. He is there to get to where he wants to go. And he has.
Well, if he's like Logan looking for the women, just follow Logan. That's who's on the same mission.
But where the snake lays his eggs is part of that, and I say that because we then go to Ford and the boy arriving at Nowhere Land. He asks if he hears a bell of a white church, and he tames a robot snake to where he sees this black church spire. It almost even looks like one of those oil rigs. Do you think these two are connected with the location of where to get to the next level and then this black spire or church steeple that's out in the middle of nowhere?
Well, first, I'd say that Ford handles snakes like Chris Pratt handles velociraptors in Jurassic World. I just love, like, his taming aspects. And I guess I wonder if the snake is also a connection back to the movie, because remember, one of, like, the first signs of trouble in the movie was that a snake had bit a guest.
Yes,
when, again,
right,
these things were not supposed to attack people. So maybe it's
Roland. It bit him.
Yeah, Roland's like the Teddy of the original Westworld. Poor guy just keeps getting attacked. But you have to feel like these two are connected, especially because we do have this church spire. I was even thinking less an oil rig and more of like one of those old school radio antennas that you would have on like big outposts out in the middle of the desert.
Yeah.
So
another
maybe
Lost
it's
reference.
All. Yeah. So maybe it's all in one. There was also this really interesting part of this scene where, you know, the boy says there's nothing out here, and Ford tells him to close his eyes and listen, and he hears church bells. Do you think Ford was allowing him to access a reverie there, or do you think the boy was just using his imagination?
Well, I think Ford says something with his hand. He goes, of course you do. He goes, oh, I hear it. He goes, of course you do.
He does the Jedi mind trick.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. I think he did. He goes, I don't hear it. He goes, I think about whatever it said. And then he goes, you see Ford do something with his hand. He goes, oh, I hear it. Of course you do. Almost like he did with the snake. I mean, he was controlling the boy, controlling the snake. He was controlling things.
Well, I think it also lends to that theory, to the wives' theory, that it's him as a boy when he says, of course you do, because he knows what this kid's memories are. If he somehow implanted memories of his own childhood or life in the boy.
No, so maybe then Ford is, in fact, kind of becoming immortal in that even though he might be dying, and who knows, maybe we'll find out later on that Ford has some sort of virus, but he's sort of implanting his own memories and personality types into these hosts. Sort of like, what was that bad Johnny Depp movie where he was inside the internet? It came out like a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Something
what was
similar
that
to that.
Bad
yeah.
Johnny Depp.
Well, there's been a few bad Johnny Depp movies, so it's hard to pick out which one lately. Or even that The Giver, where the guy just imparts these memories to the next person. But very much so if you can kind of pass your consciousness on to someone else, you know, do you then become effectively immortal?
Transcendence was the name of the movie.
I didn't see it.
Few did. But good job, Mike, on the recall. But yeah, it's definitely I like that she brought it forward, and possibly he's has a virus or something that's escalated his timeline, because he's the one that's mentioned, like, immortality in the last episode. He seems to be pushing things along into a direction that he wants to do, that does align itself really well with the... he has less time and he needs to make something happen, and him wanting to kind of impart a legacy, if you will. So I think it's a great call out. But anywho, we then go to Bernie, and we see a sweet, slick pad, and Teresa shows up, and they get it on.
Let's get it on.
He wants to have some...
Was that playing on the player piano this episode?
It was. It was. That was my other crackpot theory. Now there's two down the drains.
But I actually, speaking of the player piano, did anybody recognize the songs in this one? If there's any, I listened to it twice and I couldn't pick anything out.
I feel like Shazam is going to become like the number one downloaded app if Westworld's such a popular show, because I couldn't discern it for the life of me.
I don't know if I'm not much of a Redditor, but I'm sure they probably already deciphered it if there was that. I should probably dig into that. They get it on. Bernie wants some post-coitus talk, but Teresa jokes that he doesn't ever talk, but his creations don't shut up. And Bernie talks about how they want to become more human, which again is kind of pushing that narrative of they're kind of becoming, are they equal to or greater than human life itself. But any other thoughts about them hooking up or being together, or is it just kind of just a little side story that isn't going to be that relevant?
No, I actually feel like it's going to become prominent if and when corporate brings down the hammer on Bernie. Maybe they catch him with Dolores, maybe they catch him doing something else, and this is where she's going to be at a crossroads of, you know, do I stand up for this man who, I'm not going to use the L word, but someone who, you know, I obviously support and have a relationship with, or am I going to stand behind my company? And that's a decision that might make this character more interesting for me.
She'll stand behind the company.
From what we've seen, it seems like she'll stand by the company, but it would be an interesting plot turn if she chose to stay with her lover.
Bernie who? I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know who Bernie is.
All right. You could keep your job or you get that sweet, sweet Jeffrey Wright peen. Which would you rather have?
I'm making pretty good coin with this company. I think I'll stay with the company.
I don't know. I'll
tell you right now. I'm calling it. There's no way she stays with Bernie.
Man, you're going to wager anything on that?
3 points.
Going to Elsie decommissioning Maeve, but she decides to keep her and get her tuned up. She kind of says, "Of course, she's not." They jumped, you know, bumped up her aggressive side. Teddy, we then go to her going back in line, and Teddy and Maeve talk about her becoming professional. Hashtag Teddy gets killed. In this case, I think Teddy, can we say hashtag Teddy gets super killed, because...
Oh, yeah, this guy had, he definitely was trigger happy. I mean, he fired, what, like 5 bullets into him at point blank range?
Did Teddy know it was going to happen? Because he holds up the glass and kind of just waits there. Glass gets shot out, and then bang, 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 Teddy's dead.
I mean, it's part of the narrative. There's certain points throughout his day where he positions himself to be shot, and that was like one of the...
Okay, I actually have a theory about Teddy now. I think that Sizemore created Teddy as a way for him to get back at all the good-looking men who took all the women from him in high school. He's like, oh, well, hottie for toddy, you're going to get gunned down at every opportunity you get.
Take that, Teddy.
This is the truly revenge of the nerds.
Plus, he gave the name Teddy. So, and I apologize to anyone named Teddy out there, but it just kind of, you know.
Come on, Teddy Roosevelt?
Yeah, but that's great back in the 1900s. But
Teddy Williams? Teddy Ballgame?
Okay.
Teddy Tuxpin?
Ted Knight? I don't know.
There is something interesting in this scene as well where, again, Teddy is kind of a bullet magnet at this point, but Maeve does say something to him about, you know, you have transgressions as well. And we know next to nothing about this guy. True. Is it possible that she's alluding to a reason why Teddy may be wearing that dark hat after all?
Ooh, good point.
It could be, yeah.
Also, where is she pulling that from? Is that part of the narrative, or is that... a memory that she has.
They talk. I don't know.
Plus, remember, remember, you know, when he sees Dolores in the last episode, she says, "You came back." So you have to assume that Teddy has some sort of narrative where he lived in the town beforehand, he consorted with everyone, then he left for some time and now came back. So you'd have to assume that maybe what Maeve is alluding to is an earlier portion of the same narrative, not necessarily a reverie.
Or even like how Man in Black took Lawrence to his hometown. He's like, I did this with you, and I never knew that you had a family. Maybe there's this level of Teddy that people haven't really explored because they kill him before they can get to that part of it. But to your point, this dark side of Teddy. Because when they were at that whorehouse or whatever it was when they brought him there, he was kind of very creepy just sitting there staring off into the distance.
I think he's waiting to die. I think he's waiting to be shot.
So sad.
Well, I guess he didn't. He
actually, and they did talk about using him as target practice last week.
Exactly. He just sat there. I think Mike, you talked about last week where you used a target, but he just sat there. Yeah, maybe he's shot up here soon. What can I do? I can't shoot back because I can't kill them. And I think that's leading up to where we see later on in the season where they revolt. They can kill the human.
Kill the humans, kill the humans. Maeve goes to bed, and she goes back to that nightmare. She's almost scalped, but then she gets away, and gets shot. She runs to the house. She has a daughter, and then it's the Man in Black comes in, and then he goes towards her, and she does her count back trick, which then wakes her up in... to wherever she is.
Yeah, I'm saying it wakes her up from a bad dream into a much worse reality.
Exactly. Before we get into that section, I do want to kind of dive into this flashback, if you will, with the Man in Black showing up. It doesn't seem like a younger Man in Black, so this makes it a recent event in her life. Would we say that, or is that the wrong trail to dig into here?
Well, I wonder, this might, again, lend credence to Jack's aforementioned Man in Black theory that maybe he's a host who is sort of ageless, or maybe there's a chance that the Man in Black is playing some sort of weird Freddy Krueger role where he's sort of, like, inserting himself into these reveries, because it is a very weird shot where there is this native who's, like, painted up in all black and white that is chasing down Maeve, and you see the shot of him walking past the windows, and then he disappears, and you're assuming he's going to walk through the door, but no, it's the Man in Black. Right. So, do you think that's an image manipulation? Do you think the Man in Black is capable of being able to transform himself? That it just opened a huge amount of questions for me.
Or her images are just crossing over with each other.
Right, if it is a dream or a nightmare, if you will, it did feel very much like a nightmare. But, you know, we learned in this episode when Elsie's talking about their dreams that they have. They have the concept of dreams so that if they do flash to something that happened before, they can write it off as a nightmare as opposed to something that actually happened to them. So it was brought up, but it was like a transition that you would see like in a dream sequence where it's one person and it transforms into this other person that's like the worser version of what that could be, or something more specific to the narrative. So it's two things. One, it brings up, you know, where is this in the storyline for her? Why was the Man in Black involved? He seems to be going to scalp her too, we assume. So, you know, is there a different map on underneath everybody's head? Or is it the same? Is it the same map?
Collect them all.
Gotta catch them all. Gotta catch them all.
Scalp him on.
Why are there maps under their head? Why are there maps under their heads in the first place?
Exactly. It's part of the deeper part of the game, man.
But why would you put maps in there unless it's a whole game that's being set up by Ford or Bernie or someone else? What would be the point of having a map on these hosts?
It's probably the easiest place to put a map because if you think about
it. But why do you need a map?
Chromos under their armpit, you know?
I mean, the people, the humans know where everything is.
But that's it's a secret level. Like, you have to be there for 30 years to get it.
I get it, but...
No, I don't think
you think you just pay money. Okay, I'll give you whatever you want. Just let me get to the next level. That's what I would do if I had the money.
But you're not thinking fourth dimensionally, Jack. That does feel like, if that's true, it does feel like very Ready Player One, in that you sort of have to think about another level where this could be an interesting theory that maybe this is sort of Ford's big contest, if you will. And if you're able to, quote unquote, solve the maze, figure out exactly what's going on and make your way into the center of it, your reward could be Westworld because I'm dying.
Bring it back to the Willy Wonka theory that you had last week.
Yeah, okay.
You know what happened to the man who shot everybody in town? He lived happily ever after.
What if you hit the fizzy lifting drinks?
Well, that you have Ford freak out going, you get nothing. You lose. Like,
and then he just shoots Ford.
But then she wakes herself up. She wakes up on an operating table. She freaks out her technicians.
Those technicians are pretty sad.
So, well, what do you think? Which one was correct? I mean, because the argument was what? That one thought that the other one wasn't technically cleaning himself, even though he was using soap. Was that the argument?
Yes. If you have bubbles, you are not doing it right. Which it's an existential question that's brought up a lot in life. It's like, just, you know, what's the meaning of life? Why are we here? And proper hand washing technique. It's the three
exactly
big ones.
Well, it says that every bathroom I've ever been into, it says wash your hands.
Well, to go back to Jack's Seinfeld reference in episode one, this feels like something that could be like left. This is like part of like a Seinfeld spec script of like, oh, well, we might as well bring our unused material, our unused banter into the operating room at Westworld.
That's very true. But again, I it's nice because it says
Poppy is sloppy.
Maybe peed on the couch.
But it does give that sense of the mundane for these people working in this space. But she runs out. She sees Deddy Teddy and other dead hosts getting power washed.
Deddy Teddy, I like that name. I love that.
We have to call him that from now on.
getting power washed. And they assume they forgot to put her in sleep mode, but I think it's something greater than that.
This was frightening to watch. This was like a horror movie version of Captain America waking up in the 21st century. We're like just watching like the horror on her face as she wakes up, not knowing where she is, completely naked, being with herself cut open, only to wander around and then find a room where a bunch of what she thinks are dead bodies are being washed en masse. It just seems like something that, even though they do put her to sleep and try to shut her down, and it seems like she's back on track the next time we see her, that's clearly something that's going to ruminate in her head for the rest of this season.
Yeah, and I think for all of the viewers, too. We then go to Dolores, who wakes up very similar to the beginning of the episode, and she digs up a gun. Now, in my mind, I was like, I hope this is a special gun that can kill the guests. Which would be interesting why it was buried there.
You want the guest to die?
Isn't that where we're going to?
Well, I'm just saying. You said, I hope it's a gun that kills the guest.
Well, because then there's a way to stop the man in black, because right now he's invincible. And to bring up what we said earlier, that it'll be great if there is a moment where he does get shot and he bleeds, you know, that'll be a great...
Well, maybe Dolores shoots him after remembering all those different things he's done to her for 30 years.
That's what I'm saying. That'd be cool. So that's what I mean by I hope it's a gun that can kill the guest.
Drags it. She remembers being dragged into the barn, and then she just shoots him.
It'd be interesting. Mike, what's your thoughts on the gun, the hidden gun here?
Yeah, I mean, this is literally Chekhov's gun, right? That we're going to... I can't remember. We didn't see it get buried at any other point, right? So you have to assume that... These reveries, maybe her father had buried it at some point before he sort of went off on his own. So maybe this was, again, her father communicating to her. I wouldn't be surprised if she uses the gun to become an outlaw on her own. And maybe this is an example of her not necessarily attacking the guests, but her changing her own preordained narrative, where it seems like she's sort of on the like forlorn lover path, right? Of, oh, I'm going to say hello to my father. I'm going to go into town. I'm going to paint a little bit. I'm going to meet my lover, and we're going to, you know, gallop all over the highlands until my family gets killed at night. That's unfortunately seems to be her track. But maybe with the gun, she decides, I'm going to change my story here. I'm going to become the author of my own fate. Let me start shooting up bars.
it's a good turn.
Could the gun have something to do with the picture we saw last week? The picture didn't belong there. So maybe the gun doesn't belong there?
But at least it seems in time or theme with the.
Well, it does.
Who keeps burying things in Westworld?
but you said that the gun, maybe the gun can kill the guests.
Oops, sure.
Now, the only way that could happen is someone brings in a gun that's not supposed to be there.
That's
we found
true.
The picture wasn't supposed to be there, and they're looking, well, why'd the picture cause the dad to go nuts? Mm. So maybe the gun is not supposed to be there.
So
and maybe that's
there?
What they're that's what they're telling us with the photo, the picture, that the gun doesn't belong there either. So maybe that's what they were telling us with the picture.
But as opposed to
why have the picture in the first place if it doesn't mean anything?
Oh, agreed. But I guess opposed to Peter, who seems to, you know, accidentally find it, she seemed to know exactly where it was, which again is a different play. I like the idea that she's changing her narrative and she's going to start robbing bars.
Maybe someone that she's remembering someone in the past burying it there and told her it was there. She seems to be remembering things. Maybe that was why she knew exactly where it was.
But
got a good memory though, because I can't find my car keys half the time. So
maybe she had a tile. She had the tile that then, you know, beeps where it is. But I do like it that it's a narrative turn first. She's challenging the narrative where before her big MO, her big. You know, if she had her speech was, you know, everything has a plan and a purpose, and her challenging that is a great narrative shift for her, and it just kind of exemplifies what's going on for Dolores' character. We then go to Lee, who gives his new narrative pitch, The Odyssey on Red River, and it was almost enjoyable for me.
I thought it was cool. I did, you know.
Because you
it seemed a little... I didn't understand what it was about. He seemed to definitely give the elevator pitch, but it felt a little hollow to me. I didn't really understand. I knew there were Union soldiers involved. There seemed to be Native Americans involved. There seemed to be a nun in there somewhere, but I didn't know what else was going for it.
It was enjoyable since Lee is our designated DB, that Ford says no to the narrative. And I love it because it if we're showing Lee for who he really is, he talks a lot, but it's almost he then turns into the puppy with a tail between his legs. He's like, "Is there anything you like about it?" He likes
just means
shoes.
More bad news for Teddy. That's
exactly. Well, I'm going to take out my anger on Teddy because he has balls cut off tomorrow. He's getting dinner. Screw you, Teddy.
Teddy's going to like, "All right, now I'm drawing the line."
And Ford brings in, and we talked about, I think, at the beginning, we're talking about, you know, Logan's speech about finding out who they are. And he talks about subtlety. They come for subtlety. They don't come for, you know, this brashness that you think they do. Only thing this tells me is who you are, which I thought was a great line. And we then we kind of intersperses and cuts with our white-hatted individual, William, meeting Dolores and picking up her cans. No pun intended. Like I said, ask something like he liked the shoes, which I guess is a better walking shoe. And, you know, Bernie says the board's not going to like this, but Ford says he has his own stories working on for a long time, and he takes him to the Black Church Spire. And then we close out the episode. So thoughts on where this is going. I mean, we've talked about Ford. Maybe he's dying and he's pushing some narrative or maybe pushing about his legacy. But where do we think things are going here?
I am so interested in the idea of bringing religion into this. And again, we don't know whether this actually is a church spire or whether it's an oil derrick or a radio station, but if it is indeed
a cross
church,
on top of it, that's what I guess pushes it that way for me.
Yeah, or maybe it's just a lowercase t. You never know.
For time to leave.
I'd be so intrigued by... Yeah, exactly, because it's just like I said before with the Civil War hosts, that it was something that I sort of forgot about, but... Religion would play such an interesting role in this, because what is religion but a way to explain your current world in the realm of serving a higher purpose? Mm-hmm. And what are these hosts here to do but to serve a higher purpose? And maybe we'll sort of see what religious ties run parallel to that. Do they cross completely with that? Do they run in line with maybe this brewing idea of rebelling against your higher powers and sort of, I don't know, I guess being an atheist to your human counterparts. I'm not entirely sure, but I like this idea of bringing religion in because there's so much theming that is prevalent to what's currently going on.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Jack, what are your thoughts?
I'm really not sure what it is. I don't really have a theory on it, so.
Okay. I mean, they, like, thoughts of where it's going, or like the closing out the episode, and
you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Okay,
I'm sorry,
fine.
I don't know.
somebody stole your crackpot theory. And you're just lost. You're done.
I'm just done.
That's all I've been thinking about now.
I'm fumbling through your notes.
I wasn't prepared for this.
I wasn't prepared to be asked something at the end of the show.
But no,
you see the previews for the upcoming episodes, and it really looks exciting, and I don't want to spoil anyone that hasn't seen it, so I know a lot of people don't like to look at them. I'm just looking forward to the show each week.
To Mike's point about the original, I think it's a good call out. I think it's... it definitely would be interesting because it hasn't been brought up yet, right? If you think about, you've kind of touched upon it with like kind of creation or creation of life or the sanctity of life, if you will, of these hosts. You know, do they matter? Does their existence matter? If there is religion brought into it, it'll be will that be whatever the hosts use to empower them to say that their existence matters because they have a purpose, a greater purpose than to be your play toys.
You're saying, but if you bring religion into it, is this even something that should be allowed? You know, because you're out there, you know, you're raping, killing, you're doing things you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah,
but the. You know, maybe that's the direction they're going.
Oh yeah, the guests are like, I didn't want to get all churchy about this. I was kind of just coming here to have some fun.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Well, that would be an interesting thing as well, though. If I think Ford has better judgment than to make the new big thing. Oh, great, we're going to put a church in the middle of it so everyone can kind of pay for their sins. But what if that's something to
confession.
Kind of. Yeah, it's exactly like, oh, you can confess your sins after you shoot up this bar. But what if this is a way to sort of, I don't know, it's going to serve as a device to sort of stir up the masses amongst the guests, if you will. Like, could you imagine if someone like Logan got told that there was a church that existed now? He would bust in there and drown everyone in holy water that he could. So maybe it's a way for, like, Ford's trying to make a statement about what the immoral actions that they're doing and who they might truly be or want to become as a result. By bringing in this extreme moral point of view through the religious aspects.
Yeah.
Also, too, that the robots now, the hosts, are so human-like. You can't tell them apart. You can't tell the humans from the – because when Ford was drinking with who was it? Bill was the guy he was drinking with
old
last
Bill.
Week? Old Bill. He was definitely a robot. You could tell that he was a robot. And now they even talked about it last week that we've done the best. We've gone as far as we can with them. We can't do it. We can't make them any more human-like.
But they seem to be, right, with these reveries and Bernard in this episode talking about they talk and communicate with each other even when there's no guests there to become more human.
Bernard is the one behind all of it and not Ford.
I'm not feeling it with him so far that he's the guy in the background pulling the strings, the puppet master, if you will. Ford definitely still seems like the puppet master.
It's almost too obvious for it to be Ford, though.
Well, there's other people at play. Like, I think, you know, you have Man in Black, whatever he's up to. You have Ford, whatever he's up to. You have Teresa. We don't really know what she's going on and the corporate interests and what they're up to. And you have people like William that has his own path. And you have Dolores that is having her own path. So there's a lot of different objectives for these different characters and motivations for these different characters that are going on at the same time. It's not one single narrative that we're following. And that's what I think makes it really fun to watch and seeing the second episode is seeing all of these different narratives go forward. Because even somebody like Elsie, and she seems to have her own motivations and where she wants to push things and that she's questioning what's going on. So
they're all individuals.
Yeah.
No team players here.
and you have Lee, which has very, you know, simple motivations for what he wants to do. But it's still whatever he's trying to push forward. So that's what I really like about the show so far is that there's a lot going on. There's a lot of narrative here to dig into and enjoy.
Mm-hmm. I do want to point towards one quote that Ford had when he first emerged out in the desert, and he met that boy who may or may not be a younger version of himself, where the boy asks, "Are you lost?" And Ford just replies, "No, I just strayed too far from where I'm supposed to be." And maybe that's sort of a harbinger of doom, in that I could totally imagine a scenario where, like John Hammond, I could imagine Ford somehow, even though he's able to do a lot of Jedi mind tricks now, lose control of his creations almost. And maybe this church might be an example of that, where his newest project ends up straying too far from this path that the company really wants him to stay on. And as a result, this is going to brew a whole bunch of trouble for everyone as a whole.
Yeah, it's a good, like, it's a good call out. For sure. Well, that is what we thought about the episode. It's now time to dig into what you guys thought about the episode. It's time for listener feedback. All right, so we didn't get any calls. So again, if you want to call in, it's 385-390-311. But we did get some emails in this
calling
week.
Time.
First up is from Brendan. He said, "So I wanted to expand upon my tweet to you guys earlier. By the way, you can tweet at us at Jay and Jack, and Mike. I believe yours is at I can't remember
a now. Mike Bloom type.
A Mike Bloom type. That's right. So I want to expand upon my tweet to you guys earlier. I feel like the use of music in the show is very deliberate and is being used to manipulate the feeling of both the visitors and us as the audience." When we hear these modern rock songs coming from the sound of an organ. First, with Black Hole Sun, placed at a point where visitors are threatened by the host to take them out of the moment and put them at ease and remind them that it's all just a show. Then they double down with Paint It Black when it's hosts on host violence to remind us, the viewer, that it's all just a show. Effing brilliant. Intentionally destroying the illusion of the moment and reminding us that the characters are how fake it is. Something I did not expect this show to do. What do you guys think? Thanks, at Fitzy Brendan, Brendan, listener, long-time listener, first-time emailer. I guess it's not long-time listener if it's this show. It's two episodes, but still, first-time emailer.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, this is Brendan Fitzpatrick, who is a big listener to a lot of stuff on RHAP and Survivor Historians as well. He's a good friend of mine, and I know him and I have talked a little bit about the music choices in the show, and I think he makes a lot of great points in that the music also serves as kind of a meta moment in that, A, it's fun for us to point and say, oh, look, modern rock songs being played on a player piano. But at the same time, it's almost intentionally removing us from immersing ourselves in the narrative to sort of remind us, hey, this is a hokey theme park at the end of the day. Yes, they're doing horrible things, but they're being brought here for their own entertainment. And I think that's a really great move so that you're able to sort of put in your own Easter eggs, but at the same time also remind people, hey, this takes place on a TV show. This takes place in a world that has been fabricated for people's enjoyment, much like a TV show.
Yeah, definitely. Oh. I'm really excited to see what other songs they bring in. Again, this episode, if anybody actually picked out if there was a pop song reference in this one that we missed, definitely email at westworldjjm@gmail.com, call us at 385-390-311, or give us a tweet at Jay and Jack or at a Mike Bloom type your thoughts. This email is about episode 2 from Sue. I had some episode 2 thoughts as it is streaming early. Have you seen it? Yes, we did. And have you seen the Delos, Delos emails and the Discover Westworld website? I have not looked into that. Have either of you done any of those?
I have not done a deep dive into the website yet.
It'll be interesting. I'll dig into that more, the extended universe type stuff. Audience shout-outs, these violent delights have violent ends. I wonder if they're thinking of current violent video gameplay. It will just become more realistic with VR and better imaging. How does it affect the people playing? So the violence of this, is it an allegory to the video games and this Oculus Rift type stuff that we are seeing today?
I mean, it's tough to even say today, because let's remember, even like 20 years ago, back at the time around Columbine, when people were arguing, oh yeah, that happened because video games are too violent. I feel like that sort of reaction has come about over the past couple of decades. So I don't know if it's necessarily a new thing, even with technology getting better, but I still think it's a great comparison, because I saw a lot of reviewers when the first episode came out essentially comparing the morality of some of these guests to a person playing something like Grand Theft Auto or Call of Duty or Halo, to the point of where, like, you know, you have this guy almost like teabagging Teddy, metaphorically speaking, this episode, but shooting him up a bunch of times. So I could totally see the comparison there. I don't know if it's necessarily a one-for-one allegory referring to the fact that technology is getting better and can immerse someone in a world of violence more. It might just speak towards the general sense of violence in our community, even outside of something like video games, where someone feels like if they have the means to, they can essentially do whatever they want.
Yep. Very true. Ford says that people coming to the park want to find something that they imagine they have discovered. Then the show, the example of new guests picking up Dolores rolling the can, which we have already seen Teddy and Men in Black pick up. That sounds like a nod to us crazy mystery solvers who pore over all show details looking for clues, wanting to be the one to discover them first. So three times we've seen the can roll. Dolores' cans are getting a lot of work. Men in Black and the Maze. Now we know Ford has made the maze as a deeper game. The map to it is the dealer's scalp. Why was it meant to be found by the Indians? That'd be interesting if they're scalping people. Or even, I guess, if the Indians had the scalps, then maybe somebody discovered them, and then they would see the maze. That's just me thinking. Since Ford secretly built the maze, he probably controls the little girl who tells Man in Black what the maze is. It's not for him. This means that Ford is well aware of Man in Black and what he is doing, and he is not stopping the Man in Black. Going to the site emails, so many interesting things. Cutbacks, blackout glitches, slipshod work. Something could go very wrong in a system with all these problems. So that's an interesting call out there. So, like, with the cooling system not working and stuff like that.
Mm. Yeah, I guess, you know, I think the Man in Black says that Westworld is a place where it's all about the details, and the fact that if the Westworld system itself, the small details are all failing, is going to add up at the end.
Yeah, definitely. The park is observed by tablet and screen, but one person thinks an employee could get away with entering the park unseen because the monitoring is so poor. So what else are they not seeing? Ford may know Man in Black is there, but not see all he does. Also, that is how Bernard could pull Dolores off the set and talk to her unseen. So there you go, Jack, to your question earlier. Inter-office romance is forbidden, so Bernard and Teresa can't do anything openly. And they talk about getting...
We don't know that, though. Again, this might be a world where they forbade all that.
That's true. They talk about getting a narrative activated under the table, so to speak, look like it's possible, and that would apply to the maze. Other question, who is human, who is not? The hosts are made up of blood and guts. The website says that it is all real. Maeve actually has an infection that they're trying to cure with surgery. That's a good point. Bernard explains to Teresa that the hosts talk to each other to become more realistic, and she jokingly asks if that is why he is now talking to her. He usually doesn't. Seem like anybody could be AI. How does that work with the idea that he lost his son and is trying to bring an AI version to life? Not sure. I watched the Dreams trailer in the email, and it shows Bernard reading to a young boy in bed, so much more evidence of a child that is lost. To the overall theme, I think they're going to show us that though the park promises you can act without consequences, that is never going to be true. Lots more in there. What was Men in Black doing with the bullets? Just saving two for mom and daughter. The website says bullet safety has something to do with velocity. Interesting. Website says Delos is not responsible for the consequences of host malfunction. Can't wait to hear what you guys think, Sue. So thanks for digging into some of the extended universe stuff there.
Looks like we need to check that out.
Yes. Faux show. This next one's from Keith. So hey guys, just have a thought after seeing the first ep of Westworld. Not sure if anyone's already said this, but the Man in Black is a robot. See, Jack, your theories here. Just gotta dig in a little deeper.
Unless this is like a dummy email address that Jack set up.
But didn't I say that first though? I mean,
Somehow
I'm not gonna get called out like I did on Flash Forward, am I?
I don't know.
Remember we recorded and then someone sent it in the next day and they called me out for stealing their email.
Maybe that's like we recorded 7 years ago. I don't remember.
Hey, I don't forget.
Obviously.
I don't forget.
You're like our host here.
Exactly. I can remember they're flashing back, so you better watch out.
All right, Jay, let's cut open Jack. Let's make sure he forgets that stuff now.
Yes.
Oh, it won't happen.
Somehow he has been modified enough to be seen as human by the system. He doesn't understand that he is a robot, but does know that he can't be shot. The system that controls the gun sees him as human. He thinks he is human, and he is talking to the others, taking the others apart, trying to figure out who they are and how they work, and how this world works. He's basically disconnected from the system, and the powers that be don't see him, and he is running around inside Westworld on his own. Thanks, that's my crackpot theory.
This isn't you, Jack?
I neither confirm nor deny. I do not recall.
But yeah, it's an interesting thought. The Man Bat's a mysterious character. I'm not going with the crackpot theory that he is a host. I think
of course not. You like to be wrong.
Well, just because the way they talk about when they're saying like he can do whatever he wants, he's been here for 30 years. There is a sense that he is a human, but. With the, you know, him looking the same age in her flashback, could it be he's just the same age all the time? Or it was just a more recent flashback
for her? Why would you pick that age, though?
I don't know. There's something, like, gravelly and cool about... I mean, Ed Harris, just he's a cool-looking dude, so I don't think there's anything
wrong. He is a cool-looking dude.
I'm not going to be ageist here and say that, you know, picking...
I can do that. Form. I'm old. I'm old and bald.
I'm not going
I can. You can't.
So our last email here is from Ethan, who spoiled your crackpot theory last week, Jack.
I'm still not talking to Ethan.
Well, he said, just checking to see if I can still contribute after getting under Jack's skin last week.
No,
apparently the answer is no. Yeah,
no.
But this is a three-host podcast, and Mike, are you okay with it?
Yeah, I guess I'll overrule the tie vote here.
Yeah, and I'm okay with it. So 2-1, Jack. I'm sorry.
Okay, you know what? I don't have to listen to the email.
That's your choice. You can do whatever you want here. But Ethan asks, only joking, of course. Obviously, the little British kid is a host.
All right, Ethan, you're banned. Gone.
No, I'm welcoming into the fold now for calling Lee a little British kid. That is that's the best remark I've heard about him so far.
you're thinking he was referencing Lee? I thought he was referencing the.
Oh no! Oh, oh, okay, maybe that was just my Lee hating brain. I thought he was referencing Lee at first.
That was your motivations, Mike. You're out to get Lee here.
That's an appeal to all you listeners out there. If you want to appeal to me in the emails, just mention how much Lee sucks.
Is this a mini Robert Ford? And if it is, are there going to be other models as he grows, or is this a new kind of hybrid host that can grow with age? And if that's the case, is he trying to live forever like Wayland in the Alien Prometheus series? Thanks again.
If he wants to live forever, he has to go to the Fame High School, right, and learn 2 years of ballet, 2 years of tap.
I think so.
That was a little shoehorned in, a little that cowboy good. Boot.
That was, I liked it. Jack's lost listening. Over there, but we're still good.
I don't care.
Oh, I think he still has, like, pledged a vow of deafness in Ethan's email, so I don't think he knows.
Jack, the email's over.
I will find this password and delete his email.
Jack, Ethan's email's over. You can join the podcast.
Okay, I can come back now?
Yeah, you can start listening again.
Yeah, whatever, Ethan.
But again, thank you everybody for the feedback. Give us an email at westworldjjm@gmail.com. Call us at 385-309-0311 or tweet at us.
Calling time.
Except for Ethan, apparently. No, Ethan, no, yeah, you
Ethan,
are welcome.
Forget the number, Ethan.
You are welcome to call or email.
Yeah, whatever.
All right, now it is time for that momentous occasion that has been spoiled twice for Jack in our first two episodes. But it is time for the Crackpot Theory of the Week. Action Jackson, what half-baked Crackpot Theory do you have for us
half-baked?
Today?
Half-baked? Oh, jeez. You don't like half-baked items. Let's see. We last week my theory was that Man in Black was a host, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what if I switch it up? that he's working with Ford, right? Okay, I'm going to say he's not a host. Okay. Take that, Ethan. He's not a host.
Uh-huh.
And that Ford, because this guy has, he can go around and he can do whatever he wants. And because the corporate, he probably pays big money to the corporation and Ford's not happy about it. Maybe the map is leading him, is leading Man in Black to a trap.
Ooh.
Maybe Ford has set up a trap. Maybe this whole thing with the church, the school, whatever it is a trap for Man in Black.
Hmm.
Because he doesn't like what the direction it's going. He doesn't like the realism of it's going. He just goes through town killing everybody. Maybe Ford doesn't like that. I mean, he can kill.
So it seems like what you're saying is that Ford is almost setting the Man in Black up on his own narrative, in spite of the fact that the Man in Black is very adamant about not pursuing a narrative.
Right.
And that he's saying, okay, I know exactly what you're going to do. And we don't know the history between these two men. Maybe Ford has been observing him for a long time. And that could lend credence to the reason why it seems like, according to a piece of feedback we received earlier, it seems like Ford is purposely ignoring what the Man in Black is doing. Maybe it's not ignorance so much as that it's on purpose that he wants him to do exactly what he's doing.
He's letting him believe he's doing that. That's maybe he set this thing up that there's like the next level. To get to the next level, it's the most amazing thing you've ever seen in your life. Well, the only way he can get rid of him is to set him up with a trap, and maybe this is the whole thing with maybe the memories that are being put into the host heads, you know, brains or memories that they're getting leads them all to and finding the gun. Maybe that leads to be Man in Black being killed and Ford be getting his revenge and getting rid of Man in Black, because he will find out later on that he wanted to have this guy to stop coming. Because the map in the head doesn't make sense. I don't get why there's maps in their heads. Unless it's just something to get Man in Black. You know, maybe he's a gamer, maybe that, you know, an older one. Started with Pong and moved his way up, and that's my crackpot theory.
Okay,
I'm sticking to it. Right. Except last week it was I guess I'm giving up on my theory last week. or I have all my bases covered.
You betrayed your theory.
Yeah, but in true Westworld fashion, you just forgot your narrative from last week, and now you're
exactly
on this path.
I just woke up and just said, "Oh, okay."
Dolores, Jack.
There you go. The part with the map in the head doesn't make sense.
Why does it not make sense?
Why would you put a map in their head? I mean, unless you're doing something to lead them. Unless you're trying to guide someone in a certain direction. The only one that seems to care about the maps in the head is Man in Black. Right?
To me, I don't know. It's Mike, have you ever done an Escape the Room thing?
Absolutely, yeah.
It seemed like that for me. It's just like where there's the one that I did was like stupid hard. But it was just like just something that you wouldn't even realize.
Did you try to cut open the head of the guy that was in the room? That was probably...
Actually, the one Jay did, the key was in the door. And he looked everywhere but the door.
No.
It's a Saw-esque twist.
The last clue is in one of your members' heads.
No, it's just, why would you put the clues in why would you have to have them in there is my point. There's no reason to have them in there unless you're doing it intentionally to get someone to do what you want them to do.
If people are coming there for 30 years, there's got to be something there that's like just the one person could figure out. Just like he was there, you know, with this Lawrence guy so many times, and he didn't know that he had a family. Like there has to be so many levels.
Logan's been there forever. He doesn't care. He's just going there to get women. That's all he cares about, right? And stabbing Patchy in the hand.
But maybe it could be under Patchy's patch, the map.
Could be.
But anyway.
He says he knows where the – right?
I'm sorry. You're breaking up a little bit. What'd you say?
He said he knows where the gold is, Patchy, where all the treasure to be found.
Yeah,
it could be if they just listen to Patchy in the first place. That's where the true treasure is.
Like everybody's dumping on Patchy, but he knew all along. They just would have listened to him. That could have saved, like, the whole show.
You don't want to go with Patchy.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that is it for this week's show. If you guys would like to give us a call, do so at 385-309-0311. Also, send us an email to westworldjjm@gmail.com. Or join us. Jackie, broke up a little bit, but I'm guessing you said except for Ethan.
Except if... Then don't need to reply.
If you want to join our Facebook group, you can do so at facebookgroup.com/group/JayandJack group. Also, go to our website, jayandjack.com, with all of our related information, like how to become a patron. Big thanks to our patrons who make this show possible, especially Tack from Tokyo, Brad from Chicago, and Eckhard Richter for contributing a significant amount. And thank you to all 144 of our patrons. You see a full list of everybody on jayandjack.com. Mike is a prolific podcaster. There's a lot of great shows. Mike, where can people hear other awesome stuff that you do in the podcasting world?
Sure. So you can find me on Rob Has a Podcast, Reality TV Wrap-Ups and Post-Show Recaps, and The Survivor Historians, and The Hamster Factor. Those are all podcasts that cover reality television, scripted television, movies. Right now, stuff that I'm currently working on, I'm finishing up this season of RuPaul's Drag Race. I got a little Survivor in there, recapping the season of Once Upon a Time. And if you are listening to this on October 11th, there might be something 30 Rock related for you to listen to at post show recaps. Ooh, and I'll leave it at that.
Nice. I want to go to there. but awesome, very cool. And you can talk with Mike over at A Mike Bloom Type on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And you can also talk with us at Jay and Jack. And we'll be doing this every single week. Do we have something we want to make fun of Joe and Wiggler this week for their show? My research should have been to listen to their show to make fun of something today, but I didn't do it.
I was listening to it, but I fell asleep. So,
there you go. There's some shade there. Last week was with AJ Mass. So, Joe, we reserve judgment against Joe, and I don't think they're recording until later this week. So, I guess we'll be well stocked for next week for the gunfight at the PODCAST Corral.
Perfect. All right, guys, that is it for this week. We will see you next week for a new episode of Westworld and the Westworld. With Jay, Jack, and Mike. Until then, hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.